It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
Hello crew, TGIF.
I am Chris Dover and welcome to Firearm Friday. This week we're going to be talking with Mark from Fit and Fire. First, let's talk about a place that you can get some really cool swag, and that is over on GearWebsites.com. Jump on over there. Got all kinds of cool things from the Old West Gun playing card decks to the new Firearm Inventor series decks, as well as patches, stickers, and all kinds of cool firearm-related swag. Again, that's GearWebsites.com. All right, crew, help me welcome Mark from Fit and Fire into the house. How are you doing, Mark?
Hey, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Thank you for jumping in. Finally getting on the same schedule, I guess.
I know. I tell you about it. Yeah, it's been a few weeks since we had a chance to talk, especially since we were at NRA together, and it was finally awesome experience to see each other face to face.
Right. Yeah. It always is when you get to go and hang out at those things and meet other people. And man, especially with more and more people coming on board, I mean, I always advocate that. I advocate for people turning on the cameras and getting involved, and or even turning on the microphone and getting involved. And man, you go to these events and the media room is just packed, and it's a great opportunity to meet people. You know, some of the people you meet, writers and bloggers and things that us that are in the social media space or video space, we really don't get a chance to talk with those guys a lot, and they're doing good work the same as we are.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's almost like a family reunion of sorts,
right?
You get to see people you haven't seen in so long, you get to talk and hang out with people that you talk to on a regular basis, and then you got crazy Uncle Ronnie over there in the corner, and everything. So it's always a fun experience.
Yeah, it really is. A lot of work too. I mean, can't discount the work. A lot of people out there think that we just go to these things and party, and it's not. We enjoy the heck out of it, but it's some long, grueling days. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were at NRA. I'm glad to hear you are feeling better, because I think you had mono from kissing a bunch of girls or something.
I did. I carry around a pretty deep entourage of the beautiful women. No, not really.
Fit and Fire groupies
out there. Yeah. Weirdest thing, the day before I was supposed to leave out, so I drove all day Thursday to get there, and Wednesday about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it was like I hit a wall, and the next 5 days it just went downhill from there. Lost my voice. You know how embarrassing it is to try to talk to someone on a show floor with no voice, you're trying to make something happen and make new contacts and stuff like that, and you basically have to whisper in their ear. It's kind of awkward.
Well, you could have brought a whiteboard or something that could have worked, I guess, like a dry erase board.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing was this time my dad came with me to NRA, and this was his first NRA show, so that was kind of a real special event for him and I. And then he was there to kind of help translate in some cases. So
right. Now, speaking of your dad, I you were on one of the live streams with Liberty Doll here recently, and.
Yeah.
Perked my attention. It got my attention, some of the stuff you were talking about with growing up, and I thought, man, when I get Mark over on the podcast, we're gonna dive into that, because I'm curious.
Let's do it.
But you said that you grew up around firearms, that your dad was a collector of sorts.
Oh yeah, that was kind of, to be honest with you, it was a really cool experience, because I got to see and grow up with firearms that a lot of people didn't know about. If they did know about from some type of movie or something like that, I was the cool kid on the block that says, oh yeah, my dad's got one of those. But at the same time, it was a little frustrating, because we had all of these really cool pistols. My dad was mainly into pistols, so you know, I got to see a Luger, and I got to see a Grey Ghost P38, excuse me, and Red Number 9. Let's see, the Red 9 Mauser broom handles, and all of these really, really cool Browning high powers, these cool vintage pistols, but I could never shoot them, you know, because my dad was a collector. And right. Oh no, we can't. If we shoot it, you know, it's going to depreciate, and we need to keep them as pristine as possible. And I was like, oh man, it's just so frustrating. Right. And I made a point when I was young. I was like, if I ever start buying firearms for myself, mm-hmm. I'm going to shoot them. Right. I have to be able to shoot them. And while I haven't been able to shoot a lot of those really cool pistols that my dad had, mm-hmm. I've gotten close, and that was really what kind of pushed me in that direction. Mm-hmm. It's like I said, it's a fun experience because we go to the Tulsa Gun Show on a regular basis, and that's one of the largest gun shows I've personally ever been.
Yeah, it is the largest. Yeah,
it is the largest, yeah. Right? And we kind of stump each other. You know,
right.
I'll look at something, I know what it is, I'll be like, hey dad, what's that, you know, and I'm just like testing him to mm-hmm. see, and he's like a walking encyclopedia, and he's like, oh well, that's such and such, and that's actually the version 2, because if you look right here, the safety lever, and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's just no way to stump him, you know.
Right, that was it, mostly you know, vintage military stuff, mil-serp stuff.
No, it runs the gambit. Oh, really? You know, yeah. We were walking down an aisle at Tulsa, and he stopped and he looked, and he's like, oh, wow. And I was like, what? And he's like, well, that's a Wolverine. And Wolverine is a pistol that was that came out in the 1950s, and I don't mm-hmm. know all the specifics behind it, but I know that Forgotten Weapons just did a video mm-hmm. about one, I don't know, two, three, maybe 4 months ago,
right.
And they really dived into the history, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's the pistol that that my dad was talking about. And this pistol was designed, and it was, you know, in the 1950s, so it had kind of a Buck Rogers look to it.
Yep.
And then you know, he kind of bumbled the business a little bit, and they had to kind of revamp it, and then it kind of got into some trouble again, and they finally just kind of went away. But if you can find a Wolverine in the original box, which this is what it was. It was sitting in the original box. My wow. dad started telling me about all this stuff, and I'm just like, no way. And naturally, the price tag on it, and I don't remember how much it was, but I do remember it was expensive. Mm-hmm. And just listening to him talk about that, about a pistol that looks like it came out of a 1950s sci-fi movie,
yes,
but he just you know, blurted out all this information. I'm just like, how in the world do you know this?
Right. Yeah, that was the Whitney, with Whitney Wolverine.
Yes. I think. Yeah. There you go.
They actually reproduced those here. I don't know, a few years back. Maybe they still do. I'm not real sure, but I know that. I don't know if somebody got the patent, or the patent expired, or what happened, but. What I've heard is the repros are not the same quality or anything as the original. And like you say, at the time that those come out, those had to have been, that was the, you know, equivalent of the greatest thing at SHOT Show we see nowadays. You know, that had to have been the head turner for sure.
Oh yeah, it's a sexy looking gun, especially for the 1950s, you know. Just all those really nice, sleek, swooping designs and flow of the pistol. It just, you know, it you don't see people taking the time to put in, you know, design mm-hmm. into their pistol. It's these days with your, you know, your striker fired pistols, whether it be Glock or Smith & Wesson or whatever the case may be, it's all utilitarianism, right? It's got to be useful in one way or the other. Back then, it was, how can I make this look like it should be in a James Bond movie, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. You know, I agree, and let me hit you with this. Do you think that potentially the reason for that with modern production firearms is because those companies know that with the advancements in machining, and good Lord, now we got 3D printers and everything else, that the aftermarket stuff is just going to be so plentiful, probably, and everybody wants to personalize and kind of do their own thing. Do you think maybe that influences them a little bit just to go plain from the factory a lot of times?
Yes, it does, unless you're Taurus.
Right.
I'm just kidding. I think so. You know, in my day job, you know, I work for a pretty big corporation, and you know, you'd be surprised at how much a corporation actually looks into aftermarket and how they can actually tie in or tap in mm-hmm. to those markets. So, you know, even if a third party is making some type of widget for a pistol, regardless if it's you know a light or you know a red dot or something like that, you can't tell me one bit that a firearms manufacturer doesn't have some type of input or influence on how that gets designed or how they kind of may get a kickback for it. You know, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? There's, I think everybody's closely connected, and I think that's good. But yeah, I think Plain Jane leads itself to a very wide aftermarket.
Right. Now, with going back to your dad and just his vast knowledge, did he have a, you know, back, I'm guessing back then when you were growing up, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but you're old enough to, that the internet probably wasn't around and all that. So did he have a big library of stuff, or how do you know how he got all the knowledge he got?
Shotgun News.
Really?
Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Remember the old freaking newspaper style?
just periodicals, basically.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Cover to cover.
No, he had and still does have a ton of books. Just a matter of fact, for my birthday, he gave me two books, and I don't have them handy here. But he has two books that he gave me, and they are volumes 1 and 2 about 1911s. And it's an encyclopedia about everything you need to know about a 1911. And I've got a special place in my heart for, you know, the Jam-O-Matics, as a lot of people call them these days. But, you know, I love that pistol. I think it's probably one of the best looking pistols. It's you know, it's iconic, you know, two world wars and, all that jazz. But yeah, he gives me these volumes, and oh, by the way, he buys them in triplicate because he keeps one, he gives one to me, he gives one to my brother, and he'll actually read that entire thing and retain all of that. And then on top of that, you know, like I said, he had the periodicals with the American Rifleman or, you know, Shotgun News, and that's what I grew up with. I grew up looking through the Shotgun News and looking at all the classifieds in the back of it, or, you know, the articles about MilSERP or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, that's how he gained all of his knowledge.
Awesome. Now, with, you said you didn't, you didn't get to shoot any of those. Did you guys do any hunting, get out to the range much, that sort of thing?
You know, we never did any hunting. You know, my dad worked second shifts, for an aircraft manufacturer, and coming from Wichita, that's pretty much the jobs that you're going to have in Wichita, is something right. either directly tied to the aircraft industry or a subsidiary of them. So he worked second shift. Weirdest thing ever, he loved second shift. I worked third shift, and I hated third. I've hated second shift. But so we didn't get to do a lot of hunting, but we would go to the range occasionally, and we always went to the indoor range. Every once in a while, we'd go out to a state park that has a public range and public outdoor range. We might go to one, but it was few and far between. Maybe once or twice, maybe three times a year, and that was always a special treat. And the thing about it was, we yearned to go to the range so much, my brother and I. That every time that we went, we were just like sponges, and we fixated on every minute detail about everything that we were doing. Every round that we shot, we knew maybe the last round that we shoot for 4, 5, 6 months. So we wanted to make sure that we were very consistent in everything that we did and paid attention to all of that so that we could just maximize our time. And then on top of that, you know, that was always a great bonding experience with the three boys, you know. So
right. Now, when you went out to the range, did you get to did you have any input on what firearms got taken to the range?
Occasionally. So my dad did have a Luger 9mm that an actual Luger that was chambered in 9mm that we were allowed to shoot. So just about every time that we went to the range, we'd always request that. And then there was typically always a 1911 of some sort that we took out as well. Mm-hmm. The one that we really liked to shoot was a Paraordnance, I believe it was a Paraordnance Double Eagle. Ooh. And that was a 1911 that Paraordnance made for the military trials in the 80s to replace the 1911 A1. And it was a double action, single action 1911 that, you know, you can put it into single action, shoot it, and then it had a little decocker on it. And it was, I believe it was a 15 round, had a 13 or 15 round magazine on it as well. And that was always a lot of fun. We thought that was pretty cool that you could have a double stack magazine in a 1911. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that was late 80s, early 90s. So that was way ahead of its time, I would say.
Yeah, it was. Now, with having, you know, having access to that collection, as you you went into the Army later on, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Now, at what point did you start acquiring your own firearms?
Oh, so I joined the military in 2000, which would have been pre-1911, obviously. So I got to see the military before and after the war fight started. And it wasn't until after my first deployment and I came home that, you know, to kind of dive a little deep here, mm-hmm. after I got back in 04 from OIF-1, I just never really felt safe, you know. Spending a year in downtown Baghdad,
right,
where every other day something bad could happen real easily.
I can imagine it's hard to turn that off.
Yeah, it is. You know, I can remember coming home, the day I came home to Fort Riley, and, you know, my wife was like, hey, do you want to drive home? And I was like, you bet you I do, man. I haven't driven in almost a year. Actually, to be honest with you, yeah, it had been about a year, because prior to my tour in 03, I spent a year in Korea. Mm-hmm. So I was in Korea for a year, came home for 3 months, and then left for Iraq. So it almost been 2 years with a small little break in there that I hadn't driven. So I was like, yeah, I want to drive. And driving home, about halfway home, I found myself drifting the car into the middle of a two-lane highway, you know. And, you know, my wife's like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, my goodness, yeah. what am I doing, you know? And it was hard to let go of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And as I, you know, kind of acclimated back to normal, quote-unquote normal life here, I just still had this uneasiness, this unrest that I didn't feel 100% safe. And I couldn't figure it out why. So I remember distinctly, not too long after coming home, we, you know, in Kansas, we had one of our patented crash bang thunderstorms at about 2 a.m. And I woke up in a cold sweat, and I was like, man, if that was someone breaking in and just not a thunderstorm, what would I have done? I distinctly remember waking up instantly and looking around for my M4. I couldn't find it, right. You know?
Right.
And I was like, what the hell? And my wife woke up and she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I can't find my M4. And she's like, baby, you're home. And I was like, oh. And then I sat back and I thought about it and I was like, holy crap. What? I was reaching for a gun that wasn't there. Had that been a burglar trying to break into my home, I've got nothing to defend myself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I saved up money. It took me a very, very long time to do it, but I saved up. It took me about 7-8 months, and I was able to purchase my very first pistol. So that would have been about 2005. And seeing that I was a huge 1911 fan, you know, I was asking my dad, hey, what do you think? What should I get? And he's like, well, you know, 1911's always done us very well. And I was like, yeah, but, you know, I don't know. I want to do something different. And he's like, okay, well, you know, Springfield, they've come out with their brand new XD. You should check out one of those. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds great. He handed me a American Rifleman magazine that had a big spread about it in there. I read up on it, and I said, what caliber should I? He's like, well, unless you want to shoot a guy twice, you might as well just go ahead and get a 45.
Caliber shaming.
Right? Nothing like 230 grains of pain, right? So I bought my very first pistol was a full-sized Springfield XD45. You know, at the time, I didn't know any better. I thought that was a pretty cool gun, you know? I liked it. I liked the look of it better than a Glock, but it was still kind of that polymer type of gun, so it was still kind of cool, but at the same time, it wasn't a Glock, you know? And everyone that I talked to is like, oh, Glocks are so ugly. But now there's this cult following of Glocks, you know? It's so funny.
There has been for a long time. They're just more brave, I guess, about coming out of the closet now. So do you still have that Springfield, or did you?
No, I don't. I got rid of that fairly quickly. I had it about 2 years or so. Mm-hmm. And it was 2008 when Kansas opened their concealed carry licensing. So I immediately went out and got my concealed carry. Mm-hmm. And started concealed carrying the one time my XD45, and I quickly noticed that people were, at least in my own head, giving me some really awkward stares. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like I said, I didn't know anything about it. It's just this big, huge, honking 45 pistol that everybody could see. So I was like, man, I got to figure something out. I talked to my dad once again, and I was like, man, this XD, it's just not going to cut it, man. I want to get something that's it's going to be easier to conceal. And it's like, well, you know, Walther, they just came out with their PPS. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, and it literally just came out with it. So hard to find. But I did find this, oddly enough, I found this this pawn shop just outside of Fort Riley called, I think it was Pat's Pawn and Gun. And they were the only people that had one in the area, and he knew it. So he had increased the price accordingly. Mm-hmm. So I traded my XD for that. Plus, I think I paid another $100 for it as well. Mm-hmm. And in my head today, it was probably the most irrational decision I could have possibly ever made. And I waffle back and forth on that, but you have a 45 caliber pistol with twice the capacity of a Walther PPS and 9mm, right? So you've got a 45 versus a 9mm, and I gave up the 45 with more capacity to get something smaller, single stack 9mm. And at the time, it was the thinnest pistol on the market. Mm-hmm. in 9mm, right at 1 inch wide.
Right.
But, you know, it was a necessity I thought I needed to be able to carry. And so here I am walking around with a striker fired pistol in a leather holster in small of the back carry. You know, I knew nothing about, you know, concealed carry, the correct way to do it. I didn't even know that there was training for people to take for concealed carry. I didn't know any of that stuff. I was just a cowboy.
Right.
You know, so, so, that's kind of how I eventually got into it. Ironically enough, I don't even have the Walther PPS anymore. I traded it. I sold it because I needed some cash at the time.
Right.
And, I ended up eventually bought a Glock 19 and it's still the pistol that I carry the majority of the time today. So
you could have bought that to start with. I'm just saying.
I could have bought it when I start, but you have to also understand that I grew up with being around all of these 1911s, right? And like I said, you know, I have an affinity for that. You know, I obviously the reason why I feel that it's one of the more glamorous looking pistols is because of the influence of my dad. So having a 1911 and then looking at a Glock, you're just like, oh my God, that is so ugly. Matter of fact, when I was trying to decide on one of the pistols that I wanted to buy, I really wanted to get a Springfield EMP. And those things have been around for quite a long time. And it's a 9mm 1911. And I told my dad, I was like, that is the pistol I want. But they are like $950. You might see one for $850, but they're right around that $900 to $950 mark. And I couldn't, even today, I can't even fathom spending $900 on a pistol, you know, let alone a single stack 1911. Right. Shoot, my wife has a Kimber Micro 9 that she absolutely loves. And we spent not even two thirds of that on that pistol. And that's a Kimber. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, some of the prices out there, I mean, given an opportunity to ever be, you know, wealthy and just be able to go out and buy whatever I want when I want, that would be nice. I mean, I would own a lot more high dollar stuff, but most people out here, I think, are kind of in our boat. They're borderline poor folk.
So, yeah, I mean,
you know, $1,000, you get up into even $700-$800, you know, on a gun, it's like, ah. You know, I would like to have it. It's worth it. You know, I know the quality and the you know, machining work and the time spent and the hands on and, you know, everything that goes into it. You know, so certainly not one that knocks the retail price on. I would say probably most. There are some overpriced stuff out there, but you know, on most stuff, once you, especially in our boat, when you start talking to these companies and you really see the care and the time and the material and everything else that goes into it, you're like, oh, okay, I know why that's $1,200, or I understand why that's $1,500, but still, it's a little out of my yearly budget.
You know, and it's real interesting. I never considered myself to be a gun snob, you know, but you know, you do four videos on a Taurus G2C, and all of a sudden you are nothing but a, you know, like Kimber shill, you know. Right. You say a few bad things. That is your opinion about Taurus, which, you know, Taurus is fine, but you know, you're just a little critical about someone's, you know, purchase, and all of a sudden, you know, you're just a gun snob, and it's so funny because I don't consider myself a gun snob. I love Palmetto State Armory, right? I love Arrow Precision. Mm-hmm. These are two companies that produce good stuff. One is a little bit more budget-minded. The other is kind of a higher-end budget model, but they're still well in the grasp of most people. And and I get called a gun snob, and I'm just like, oh, Wow. Okay. I don't own a Daniel Defense. I probably will never buy a Daniel Defense. I have a Colt 6920, and the only reason why I bought it was because it was on like a super huge discount sale from Gun Pro Deals. I got a 6920 for like $799, and it's funny, you know.
No, I get it, and it's a lot of it is perception, you know. Especially if you do, like you say, a series of four videos or something like that fairly quickly. And, you know, hey, if getting called a gun snob is the worst thing you get called, you're doing good. So,
believe me, it was not the worst thing I was called.
Right. I've always fell back on, I really love and have bunches of different models, but I really love the late 1800s, early 1900s. That was just, for me, that was an Americana era. Hmm. And a lot of cheap stuff. I mean, you had the Smith & Wesson and the Colts of the times, right? Smith & Wesson was probably on top for the most part during that time. And then everybody copied them, the Hopkins and Allen and the Ivor Johnsons and the, good Lord, I can't even think of the other models that are out there, but there's bunches of them. And so what, you know, that was the era where you could buy a firearm in a drugstore or in a feed store, you know, in a department store where they're selling dresses and makeup, you know.
Yeah, don't forget the Winchesters.
Catalogs, order them online, get them sent to your house, you know, the whole nine. And I just love that whole era and the firearms in it. And one thing that has taught me over the years is to appreciate something for what it is, right? A lot of those were cheap. They would call them, nowadays people would call them a Saturday night special, but you know, the pistols were designed to put in your pocket, pull it out if and when you needed it, and that was pretty much the only time you were going to pull the trigger on it. And the same way with a lot of the long guns of the time, a lot of the I'm trying to even think now, but the break action shotguns, you know, even lever action rifles to an extent, a lot of bolt rifles and things like that at the time, and they were for the farm. I mean, they were for hunting, for dispatching varmints, for, you know, they had a purpose, right? And nowadays people get hung up, and I think that everything to them has to be the ultimate pinnacle of a firearm, right? I mean, they got to be able to buy this. It's got to be able to defend themselves, defend their family, feed their family, have fun at the range, shoot competition. And I'm like, guys, you know, there's a bunch of different firearm companies and models for a reason, and that's because everything kind of has its place.
Yeah. Not everybody can have a Desert Eagle 50 AE, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I would prefer the 44, but that's me.
All right, yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, you know, it's interesting you bring up the late 1800s and the early 1900s, and a lot of people would point back to that time as kind of the golden age of guns. You know, there was so much innovation going on. It seemed like every single year there was one major leap forward in invention of a new caliber or a new firearm, a new action, you know, whatever the case may be. And I'd have to agree with you. That is a really interesting time to kind of dive into, especially if you're interested in history. One of my favorite movies is the Robert Downey Jr.'s version of Sherlock Holmes. And the second movie that they came out with has one of my all-time favorite historical firearms, which is Mauser broom handle. Mm-hmm. I have this like weird connection with 1880s, 1890s Europe and America. Mm-hmm. That I just absolutely love. And but interestingly enough, if you take a step back and kind of look at the time that we're living in right now, you could almost say that right now is a golden age as well. You know, by and large, for what most of us make, you know, ammunition prices are probably about as cheap as we've seen them in a long time.
Definitely.
You know, accessibility to our favorite firearms is pretty much in reach, depending on what you want. You know, to be able to buy an AR-15 cheaper than you can get an AK-47 right now is mind blowing.
And
you know,
some cases even cheaper than an SKS, which is crazy.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you can buy, I think right now, Classic Firearms has SKSs that they've just lowered the price on them to $359.99, and I'm pretty sure you could probably pick up a AR-15 from Palmetto State Armory. You may have to assemble some of it.
Right.
But if you buy...
Most definitely a kit with a lower. Most definitely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You could probably pick up one for $300 to $350. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's take a break here real quick. I'm going to give the listeners out there a chance to win one of the little CloverTac Ranger eye patches. And what we're going to do is I'm going to get Mark to give us a passphrase here. And when he does, I want everybody out there to get on their email. And if you will email media, that's M-E-D-I-A, media at clovertac.com with the passphrase Mark's going to give us, then you'll be entered to win that patch. So if you would, Mark, give us a password or a passphrase for that giveaway.
The passphrase is Yeet Cam Cannon. Yeet Cannon is what it is.
Yeet Cannon. That's going around. So that's a term of the time for sure. So yeah, if you're out there, if you're listening, want a chance to win that little CloverTac Ranger eye patch, then yeah, shoot us an email, media@clovertac.com, and yeah, Mark said the passphrase was Yeet Cannon. So I want to move on.
Only because of the dumpster fire High Point's marketing team has to be in right now because of what they did in the last like couple of days. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And if you guys don't know, what they've done is they've come out with their like what version 2 of the C9 with a break and an RMR cut and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, for a High Point, it looks pretty cool. And they gave everybody the opportunity to name the brand new version. Mm-hmm. And the most voted on name was Yeet Cannon. And they put an Instagram post. So it was going to be the YC9. And they were going to put it in the running with a, you know, with all the other ones. And there was supposed to be a drawing, what, like at the 25th or something. And then all of a sudden, yesterday, they came out and YC9 wasn't on the list. And the internet just melted down. The gun community just melted down and says, "Where's the Yeet Cannon?" You know? So they forced High Point to put the YC9 back on to the list of possible names. And if I'm a betting man, I'm pretty sure that this quote unquote fair election is probably not going to be a winner for the YC9.
Right. Wow. Well, that's I don't know. Gotta flex our muscles on the social media sometime.
You know, it's interesting because
Go ahead.
I was gonna say it's just interesting that when we get mobilized, it's amazing what we can do. It's amazing what kind of influence we can have in the gun industry if we get mobilized. And if we can get a few thousand people to cry havoc at Yeet Cannon not being on the list of names for for a pistol, imagine what we could do elsewhere, you know?
Yeah, right. That plays into a little bit of the topic I kind of want to talk about for a few minutes here next, and that's the Second Amendment. When you know, when did you, I don't know how to ask this, every time I have a guest on, it's weird, I haven't found a good way to ask it, but when did you sort of become aware, I guess, of the Second Amendment? Woke, so to speak.
Second Amendment woke. I mean, I'm a history major, so I have a bachelor's degree in history from Kansas State University. Mm-hmm. So naturally, I always knew that it was there. And as concealed carry opened up in the state of Kansas, you know, I kind of, understood the nuance of the Second Amendment, but I didn't like believe in it, right? I just thought, hey, you know, this is kind of, dare I say, at the time, this is kind of the hip thing to do, right? This is kind of what the kids are doing, you know? So it wasn't, it really wasn't until after I got out of the military and the wife and I went back home to our hometown, and I reconnected with one of my best friends from high school, who coincidentally now is one of my biggest supporters of the channel. You know, he's the one that really kind of pushed me into the, dare I say, the political aspect mm-hmm. of the Second Amendment, why it's so important, why it actually means so much to us to be able to not only defend ourselves but to defend against tyranny, you know. And it's mind-boggling to see,
and among so many other things too, you know, like your dad's collection, for example, you know, something that mm-hmm. that's pursuit of happiness right there. He enjoys collecting, and by God, he should be able to collect them, right?
That's a great point. That's a really good point. Yeah. But you know, it wasn't until here, I would say probably in the last, realistically, probably about the last 6 years, that I really kind of dove into the activist side. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, and I'll talk about something here that I don't bring up too very often because I don't like to politicize it too much, but you know, a lot of people, if you watch Fit and Fire, you've probably seen my daughter either jump in on a live chat real quick to give me a kiss, or in my giveaway videos, or whatever the case may be. And mm-hmm. she has a very specific name. Her name is Corianna, and it is a mashup of Corinne and Andrea. And those are, that's my sister-in-law and my niece, who were killed in a mass shooting in 2009. And, you know, at the time, you know, it was different, right? So mm-hmm. anytime that there was a mass shooting, you know, right around the 2008, 2009, 2010 timeframe, it wasn't necessarily as politicized as it is right now.
Right.
Yeah, it was in the news. They talked about it. It's an unfortunate event. But now there is all this political posturing, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So, so that was kind of the seed that was planted in, I think, in my heart to really start to understand why it's so important to have the Second Amendment. And then when I came home from the military and reconnected with my buddy, and he kind of connected the dots, he's like, you remember, you know, what happened to your sister? You know, had she had the ability to, you know, have a firearm with her at the time, mm-hmm. maybe things could have turned out differently. Or if the guy who was trying to run down the shooter and run him off the road, mm-hmm. which is actually something that happened, there was a good Samaritan that tried to run the shooter off the road. Had he had a firearm with him, you know, maybe he would have survived that encounter, because while he was trying to run the shooter off the road, he actually ended up pitting his own car, and the guy got out, walked up to him, and shot him. You know,
right.
Yeah, it was a horrific day. And the interesting thing that really came from that was talking with the family years after it happened, when we were okay to kind of talk about it a little bit more, and find out that everyone in my family doesn't have a different perspective about firearms than we did the day before it happened. We all know that the firearms didn't do the killing. It was the guy who did the killing. The guy was walking around with a tool and could have easily used his car, could have used you know, a garden utensil, could have used an axe, who knows what, right? It was just a tool. So it was between that incident, talking with my family, and allowing my best friend to really connect all those dots that I really started to become a bit of an activist for the Second Amendment and to encourage people to support the Second Amendment, not only for their ability to protect themselves, but also the ability to protect others as well.
Yes, right. Wow, thanks for sharing that. I do appreciate you sharing that. And I don't know quite how to move on from that.
Like I said, I don't like to highlight it too much. I've talked about it occasionally. I try to keep it very, I try to, you know, keep that whole incident, I don't want to say private, but I don't want to come off as if I'm glorifying the whole incident to say, hey, look at me, you know.
Right. No, I think you did a great job. You was not politicizing anything or grandstanding on anything. I mean, that's part of your story and your experience, and it's important. And I'm thankful that you shared it. I would like to move a little bit into what you're doing nowadays before we get out of here, as far as the channel and you know the fun. Hopefully you're having fun doing it and all the different projects that you got going, if you want to talk about all of that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Man, I tell you, things have just been a whirlwind since we saw each other at NRAM, and it just gets busier and busier every week, it seems like. So I've got a number of different projects right now. I just was at Tactical Response, not this last weekend, the weekend before last, doing their fighting rifle course. So I just put up a video last Friday on my experience there. If you guys are interested, check that out. It was a really great 2-day course. Learned a lot, even though a lot of the information was tucked away deep in my memory banks. There still was a lot of great information that I was able to pull away from that. But one of the other great things about that course as well was I got to really kind of test out a few pieces of gear. I have a brand new AR-15 build that I did. It's an AR-15 pistol. It's a M4E1 from Aero Precision that ran flawlessly. I did run it a little dry, so I did run into some issues with it, failing to feed, but that was a maintenance issue, not a mechanical issue, right? Mm-hmm. I have some medical gear that I ran through that course that I'm going to talk about here pretty soon. Nice. There was a weapons-mounted light that I'm going to talk about here in the next week or so. And then I'm going to really
Was it
start...
an O-Light? Was it an O-Light?
It was an O-Light, as a matter of fact.
You're going to get hate. You're going to get hate. I'm just be prepared.
Yeah, you know, I get it. But you know, to be frankly honest with you, I'm not going to talk about a product that I don't personally believe in.
Totally,
right? You know,
I totally understand. It's just part of their marketing.
Of course, yeah. It's turned into a meme at this point.
Yeah.
But so one of the things that I'm really trying to focus on moving forward later on this summer, and then moving into the rest of the year, is trying to change the format of how I do videos moving forward. I got some projects, like I've already mentioned, that I need to kind of finish up here. But one of the things that I really want to start focusing on is being able to provide content to you guys, talk about, you know, a new rifle or a new piece of gear, but do it at the range to where I can actually put it through a bit of a test, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of just showing me, you know, shooting at a target static, why not throw a bit of a workout into it, right? So the channel's Fit and Fire. I started my channel, you know, doing workout videos and firearm gear review, and I've kind of gone away from that and focused heavily on firearms and gears because that's what everyone seems to be interested in. Right. But I want to be able to move back to that and kind of combine both of those. Right. So, you know, being able to do something a little bit more realistic to what, say, Pat Mack is doing, or not to say that what he does is unrealistic, it's very realistic for his abilities, but I'm an average guy. I'm not ripped, right? I'm not a real world tactical guy, right? Mm-hmm. That dude is just a beast. But I'd like to be able to, you know, do some videos for everybody where I talk about a product, whether it's a firearm, piece of gear, run it through a drill at the same time that, say, I'm going to do an El Presidente drill. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to run it twice, but in between each iteration that I'm doing, I'm going to run like 100 yards and do, I don't know, 50 push-ups, run back to the firing line and try to run the El Presidente drill and see how much of a physical stress mm-hmm. induces errors on the target, you know?
Right.
And then be able to talk about, well, this is how this piece of gear performed mm-hmm. while doing that. So that's kind of the direction I'm going to head. We'll see how it works.
I think that's a pretty good strategy. It sounds like you know, if you started the channel that way, it sounds like you kind of have a passion for that. And so weaving that into, you know, not necessarily dividing the content, but being able to weave that in, I think is a pretty smart move. So I would agree to that and looking forward to it. We're going to take a quick break here just to talk a little bit about Sportsman's Guide. Now, if you're out there, if you're an outdoorsman, a hunter, a fisherman, whatever the case may be, and you haven't checked out Sportsman's Guide lately, well, you might just be missing out on some great deals on all the outdoor products that you love. So jump on over there, and if you like what you see, you might even become a Buyers Club member. That's sportsmansguide.com. Now, as far as platforms that you're on, where are you at? Where all can people find you?
Absolutely. So obviously the main place that I'm at is going to be YouTube. Obviously it's probably not everybody's favorite place, but it is what it is for the time being. I'm also on GunStreamer right now as well. Naturally, if you're interested in social media outside of those two platforms, Instagram is probably where I post the most mm-hmm. at, and then also on Facebook as well. All of those are going to be some form or fashion of being Fit and Fire. So either Fit apostrophe N space Fire, or you can do Fit space N space Fire. Most of that will get you right where you need to be, right, and be able to find me.
Well, I know that I've been advocating, and hopefully they went through some changes lately. So once those changes get lined out, hopefully they'll open up and bring some more people in. But you're definitely one of the channels I've been advocating to get over into full 30.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah.
You so, and a couple of other, you know, I don't want to say smaller. Your leaps and bounds bigger than I am, but, you know, certainly smaller than a, you know, Military Arms Channel or Hickok or one of those.
Sure, yeah. And you know, I realistically think that anyone like 15,000 subscribers and below, I think we're kind of still in the same ballpark, you know?
Well, and my take on it is that I think we're the new wave. I think small channels are going to be the new wave.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the dynamic of the way YouTube used to work and all of your huge channels are used to that, I don't think any of us, I think it's really unrealistic to think that any of us will ever achieve, unless we start doing something really off-the-wall crazy with our channels, maybe. I don't think with YouTube and the current setup, I just don't foresee anybody getting to a, you know, demo ranch, nothing fancy, Hickok, you know, FPS Russia style status anymore. I think those days are over. Can we get to several hundred thousand? Sure, I think that's entirely, you know, plausible and possible. But, you know, the millions and millions of subs, I think the game has changed so much now that you're going to start seeing just a whole host. And we already see that. Mentioned it at the top of the show with making these industry events and seeing our friends and stuff like that. And it seems like every show there's a new guy, you know, somebody new that's turned on the camera that's doing it. So, and it's great to see because, you know, we have power in numbers, I think.
Yep. I fully agree with that. And I think that there's actually starting to be a new wave of, you know, pro gun YouTube channels out there. One of the guys that I ran across here recently is by the name of Roger Barrera. And, he's got like 6,000. He just hit 6,000 subscribers this weekend, and his content is like on the level of like a Talon Psy, right? Just the really nice, vibrant video with, you know, a bit of a music backdrop to it, a lot of jump cuts, really kind of hip type of material. I keep on saying hip like I'm in the 1970s, but, you know, kind of but younger, you know, bringing in a younger crowd.
You've got to be able to do things to keep attention on the younger crowd.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'd say if you guys are interested, check him out. He just did a video just a couple days ago about a new AR build that he did. It was pretty cool, from Ventura Arms, I think. I think it's the name of the company that helped him build it. So, yeah, go check him out.
Awesome. And I guess on that note, we are going to we're going to get out of here. Before we do, though, mention the giveaway for the Ranger Eye patch. What was that pass? You remember the fast phrase? I'm sure you do, Mark. What was the pass?
Oh, yeah. It's the big phrase, the big buzzword right now is Yeet Cannon.
Yeet Cannon. So send those emails over to media@clovertac.com. Put in there, Mark said Yeet Cannon, and we will get you in the running to potentially win one of those Ranger Eye patches. Mark, I want to thank you for coming on. Thank you for joining us. Hopefully this is it the last time we get to do something like this. Maybe we can make a live show or two here and there and hang out, have some fun. And any plans to make GRPC, the Gun Rights Policy Conference?
Oh, man, I really want that. That's in Chicago, is that right?
Phoenix this year.
Phoenix. Oh, Phoenix this year. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, so unfortunately, I've got maybe one last trip left in me this year. It was going to be for the IV-8888's range day in October. This year, it's going to be on my daughter's birthday, so I'm passing that up.
Yeah.
And I think if I can get it past the commander in chief.
Understood. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I think I may be taking a trip out to the East Coast, hanging out with a certain AK guy. So, see what happens there.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thanks again for jumping in. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertac.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertac. Have a great weekend.